All right. Hey, everybody, Rob Maurer here, and today we have the good fortune to be joined by Rich Lee. He is the head of program and ETF trading at RW Baird. So, of course, with Tesla's S&P 500 inclusion coming up tomorrow, I thought it would be a great opportunity to discuss with someone that may have a little bit more familiarity with what these funds may be doing and how they're approaching Tesla's inclusion tomorrow. It's obviously a big event. We've been talking a lot about it. So thanks for coming on today, Rich. I know you've got a lot of stuff going on, so appreciate the time and your patience getting this all set up too.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me, Rob.
So do you just want to give us a little bit more background on, what that exactly means, head of program and ETF trading at Baird?
Sure. So basically, in my role on the program and ETF trading desk at Baird is to help our institutional clients execute programs or baskets of portfolios, which basically is their way of investing or putting their investments to work. So for instance, if we're talking about the S&P 500, for instance, if we have an institutional customer that manages a S&P 500 fund, they will need to buy that basket of S&P stocks and will do that via program trade. And we help them do that on our desk at Baird.
Okay, got it. So just to sort of level set with what we as a, Tesla Daily audience have kind of been talking about over the last couple of weeks and months, I guess, at this point. Basically, our understanding is that as Tesla is added to the S&P 500, they should come in somewhere around a 1.5% weight of the index. And index tracking funds, which from what the S&P has published, appear to be about $4.6 trillion in assets under management. So kind of the general understanding is that, okay, if all the assets under management for those tracking funds need to be 1.5% weight Tesla, well, they're going to need to buy, changes every day, but roughly $80 billion, $70, $80 billion of Tesla stock, which ends up being, 110, 115 million shares or so. So the big question for everybody that I'm seeing in the retail investor community is how are these funds going to go ahead and, acquire those trades? And as I sent you earlier today, we've or acquire those shares. As I sent you earlier today, we've been looking at sort of like the SPY, IVV, VOO. They publish their holdings every day in a PCF, a portfolio composition file. And as of yesterday, they didn't have any positions in Tesla yet. So are we sort of correct in interpreting that to say that these funds are still having to purchase Tesla kind of on the open market in the next couple of days to, fully track the index, or just kind of what's going on with all that?
Well, first of all, I looked at some of your research, and you guys did a good job. You're approaching, you're thinking about the right thing. So,
Thank you. Thank you.
but yes, absolutely. If you think about your typical index fund, your typical tracking fund, that's benchmarked to the S&P 500, right? These are, if you think about it, by and large, right, tend to be low cost, low expense ratio funds, right? So they can't have what's known as a lot of tracking error. Funds. So, for instance, it would be somewhat out of characteristic for, say, the Spiders Trust, for instance, to buy Tesla on the day it got announced because that was a month ago. So that would introduce, tremendous tracking error, right? So by and large, what you would see vanilla indexers do and vanilla index funds that are tracking the S&P 500 do is buy the shares on the close because obviously, as you know, mutual funds and tracking funds are tied to net asset valuations, which are tied to the closing price of stocks in the stock market.
Okay, so really they're trying to get that closing price for their Tesla shares on Friday, December 18th, tomorrow.
That's right.
Okay, so yesterday's episode, we went through sort of the closing cross trade, which seems to be, whoever wants to can place an on close order and they can get their, hopefully get their shares either sold or bought on that closing price. So is that going to be just like, is it going to be these index funds trying to get 110 million shares tomorrow in those last 5 minutes at that closing price, or is that sort of the theory?
So absolutely. So tomorrow is quadruple witching, and any quadruple witch, which happens quarterly, is always a very busy trading day. And again, because they are tied to an asset net asset valuation, which happens as a result of participating or happens as a result of the published closing price on the official primary exchange on which the stock is listed, you will see the majority and the bulk of the volume happen on tomorrow's close.
Okay. Wow. I mean, that's what we've been kind of thinking, but it's just kind of shocking to hear, that is the plan because it just seems like such a significant amount of Tesla's float. If it's just the index tracking funds here, we're talking probably 15% of Tesla's float. And then of course there are other benchmarked funds against the S&P 500. And if they want to take an equal weight position too, then it's, maybe even another 20%. Obviously, they've got a lot more flexibility there on the benchmark side. But from your experience, is that a trade that should be, you know, easily handled in that sort of time frame? Or
well, so, you know, and to your point, it is certainly a very exciting event, right? There's been a lot of buzz about it. People have been talking about this trade. I mean, people have been talking about Tesla's potential inclusion in the S&P since over the summer, right? And then they thought it was going to happen for September. It didn't get announced. And then you had the stock sell off. So there's been a lot of excitement about it. And people have kind of known that this is coming. You know, to your point, is sort of the complexity of the trade. You know, obviously, when you're dealing with trading and trade certain trade volumes of that size, there's a lot of operational risk and complexity involved. So, you know, you want to make sure that you have your trading processes down. You want to make sure that your risk tolerances and your risk systems and all your trading systems are kind of, you know, optimally tweaked so that you're ready to perform and accept that type of volume and throughput on the exchange.
Okay. So from just a, you know, execution perspective, it sounds like there are probably some technical challenges that people are sort of trying to prepare for. But from, and you know, maybe this is outside of what you'd want to talk about, but from just a sheer liquidity perspective, I guess, and I know the S&P sort of asked, you know, do we want to do this split between December 14th and December 21st, or do we just want to do it all in one go here on the 21st, which would obviously be the close on the 18th. And they did decide for that just the one single day. Are there liquidity concerns that you're kind of hearing out there, or how should we be thinking about that?
Sure. And a valid question, right? Especially with the trade of this size, there's certainly, you know, certainly considerations with regard to liquidity. However, that said, I think having it on one particular date also kind of pools your liquidity, right? As opposed to spreading it out, you know, as one of the proposals, which is to spread the inclusion event over two separate dates. What you now have is one date, one coordinated, aggregated liquidity point for which investors and hopefully the marketplace can rally against. And, you know, you have to think about it. With the investment community, you want a robust ecosystem, right? So you have obviously tracking funds, index managers that need to buy Tesla. Hopefully, you know, there are potentially hedge funds out there that have been positioning for this and trying to, you know, buy low and sell high. And maybe Friday's that sell high date, right? So hopefully what you want to see is a robust liquidity environment where there are buyers and sellers coming out, but it certainly will be a active time on Friday.
Okay. And you mentioned earlier that this was chosen because it is the, you know, the normal rebalancing date that occurs on quadruple witching day. Can you give us just, I know it's kind of a little bit deep and we are on a bit of a time schedule here. So can you just give us a little bit of background on what that quadruple witching day means?
Sure. So quadruple witching is something that happens on the quarterlies, December, March, June and December and September. So every quarter, every year, and those tend to be dates where the S&P and some other associated indices will enact their published index changes. So you have a couple of things. You have index and stock futures, index and stock options that are expiring on that date. So again, it becomes a very important date with regard to liquidity concentration.
Right. Okay. So in terms of that liquidity then, a lot of people have been speculating that, okay, maybe we can't see Tesla in these, you know, portfolio composition files because the shares are being hidden in another fund. So let's say we're talking about VOO and Vanguard, you know, do they have the Tesla allotment that they need just in another fund that they're going to, you know, transfer over? Or are these funds doing things like, you know, buying options to make sure that their position is secure? They trading in dark pools, like a lot of these type of questions. So we'll kind of just go in order there. But the first one would be, are funds going to be transferring just between themselves, sort of one fund to another?
Not something I could really speak to because, again, I think that would be on the more for the buy side money manager and their investment strategy. Is that a strategy that they think they can make money doing? Is that a way they think they could potentially reduce tracking error? I think those are sort of, you know, decisions that are with the individual money managers. So a little bit sort of outside of my domain as something that helps our customers actually execute the trade, right?
Sure. Sure. That makes sense. And then probably I would guess maybe similarly on the other ones, but it probably varies by fund then, but do you have any idea if in general, these companies might, or these index funds might be taking options positions or anything like that? I've heard that they don't, but it would be great to have if you have any other thoughts on that.
Yeah. no real view on that. But that said, you know, I come back to the thing that Ed said earlier in this, right, which with regard to tracking error and expense ratios, that a lot of these funds are so focused on cost and minimizing tracking error so that they can, you know, meet their benchmark objectives. You know, I think it would be, you would kind of deviate from the mandate of what you were trying to accomplish if you kind of did things that sat outside of, hey, listen, you know, we're an index fund, we're tied to the net asset valuation, and the way we get that net asset valuation is by trading and getting closing prices on the day of the particular index event. So I think, you know, that's one thing to kind of keep in mind as you think about passive and index funds and tracking funds.
Right. Makes sense. So probably the simplest way to look at this is, okay, we're going to have all these index tracking funds that, you know, the easiest, simplest way for them to do what they're trying to do, which is reduce their tracking error to zero, essentially, is to just acquire the 1.5% shares that they need on the closing price on Friday. And then the hope is that by announcing this, you know, 35 days in advance or whatever it was, the S&P has allowed enough time for sort of hedge funds or whoever else to kind of front run the trade where they're getting enough shares available to present that liquidity on this day so that there's enough to go around, everyone can get their allotment. That's kind of, to put it in the most simple terms, what the scenario that we're looking at here is, kind of, right?
Yeah, I think that's fair. And what you're doing is basically you're allowing the market, and i.e. the ecosystem of market participants, to prepare for this event, right? To your point, people may have seen the announcement and say, hey, here's a great opportunity to get an announced 3 weeks ago. I'm going to buy it low and hopefully sell it higher, right? You may have active money managers that have sat on the position for, you know, a few years and you know, accumulated a position and view this as a liquidity event and as a good opportunity to maybe, you know, take some shares off. So again, so by announcing it, it allows all market participants to prepare for this event.
Right. So at that point, you could have a big fund that has held a lot of Tesla for a long time, and now it's up, you know, 10, 15x, and they're looking to reduce their position or even close their position. And this provides them, you know, a ton of liquidity to sell off that position without having to go in the open market and, you know, sell millions of shares off, which is obviously going to cause the price to fall. They're going to get a pretty bad weighted average price.
Absolutely.
Right? Okay. Absolutely. Okay. That makes sense. So that's super helpful so far. Very helpful. I think maybe one of the last questions I would have then would be, do you have any thoughts on what would happen if these funds aren't able to, you know, let's say we're heading into those last 5 minutes of close and we're seeing this huge buy side imbalance on that closing cross trade. Is the stock just going to kind of like trickle up then in that last 5 minutes? And then a secondary question would be, if there's an imbalance at the end, does that just kind of carry over to the next week? These funds just keep buying?
Sure. So in general, what you're talking about is the closing cross process, right? And, you know, you see buy and sell imbalances on the closing auction on the primary exchanges all the time. It gets disseminated, I believe at like 3:55 every day, right? So what happens is, hey, there's net shares to buy. And what that does is, by indicating that net buy or sell interest, it allows other participants to kind of come in and potentially offset some of that interest. And so what happens is, you know, stock continues to build and you'll see imbalances go back and forth until it's supplied and you've supplied as many of sort of the market, what's called market on close orders, and you can match as many buyers and sellers as possible. And so there's a whole sort of uncrossing mechanism that happens on the exchanges.
Right. And that's basically due to the transparency that's provided in that last, you know, 5 minutes of trading, just to try and bring those sides together.
Correct.
So should we expect, if there is a big imbalance, some pretty like volatile price swings there? Obviously that's very speculative, but from what you've seen in the past, would that be something that could be reasonable to see?
Yeah, I think, you know, again, when you trade into the close, and especially around rebalances, you do see a lot of activity. You do tend to see sort of a lot of volatility in the price action in the last few minutes of the day.
And then from your experience, if there has ended the day with like a significant imbalance, does that tend to carry on over in the next week, or funds are going to be trying to buy in after hours, or any thoughts?
Well,
on that?
So what will happen on the auction, there will be at some point, there will be an optimal point in which, you know, there's a net sort of buyers and sellers are met, and there will be an uncrossing price, and there will be a closing price that's published, and, you know, there will be sort of both counterparties are satisfied. To your point, if I'm understanding correctly, will there be sort of additional buying demand because, you know, people didn't sort of get their orders in, or you know, or have other strategies, you know, that remains to be seen. But in general, again, with regard to the indexers, they need to trade on the close as of tomorrow.
Right. So that all makes sense. And I guess the essence of the question is, you know, if that price discovery happens at a point that's, you know, let's say just hypothetical situation here, not something I expect to happen, but let's say hypothetically Tesla goes up to like $2,000 a share or something, like are index funds going to still sit there and be like, all right, like give us our allotment then, or are they just going to wait until that sort of squeeze subsides and try to get a better price next week? I know that's not really their intent, but.
I think again, because it's tied, you're tied to the net asset valuation based upon the closing price. And if that's the closing level, that's the closing level. But again, you know, the hope is that there are enough players out there and it is a robust enough ecosystem that things don't get too out of whack one way or another.
Right. Okay. I mean, that answers a lot of my questions. Is there anything else that, you know, just comes to mind that you think maybe retail investors should try to have a better understanding of for an event like this?
I think you guys did a great job, and hopefully this discussion helped shed some light, and we'll see what happens tomorrow.
We will. It's going to be an exciting day. All right, Rich, thanks for taking the time. I know it's a busy time of year for you guys. So I appreciate you squeezing us in here, and very insightful. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot for your time. Take care, Rob.